I am Paulanne Peterson, and I am a writer of poetry.
Yes. Wow. Meesh. Is that you?
That's me and Bill Stafford, yeah.
Wow.
That was actually, that was the summer he died. Mm. That was the Portland Poetry Festival.
We're looking at trying to ask writers, authors, people working in publishing, what do they remember? How did they get started? Who was their inspiration? What was the first time they ever wrote that they can remember? Do you have a favorite memory?
Well, that's interesting because I think one of the questions you proposed earlier was how and when did I decide that I was going to be a writer? And yesterday I was out on my deck working on a series of poems that I'm doing right now, and I thought to myself, now, right now, this is, so the answer, you know, in a very real way, I don't mean this simply to be clever, but if you were to ask me that question, how and when did I decide that I was going to be a writer, I could say quite honestly, yesterday, because there is, the process itself is so exhilarating. It's as if the world begins anew each time you're involved in it, each time you're immersed in that process. And that's not the kind of answer that you want.
No, that is an absolutely brilliant answer. Love
that. But really, that I thought to myself, this is why we writers return to this again and again as often as we can. You know, a poem, any work of art, is a vehicle for transformation. And if it's good, the painting or the piece of sculpture or the film or the dance or the poem, when someone hears it, sees it, reads it, that person is someone, as the person finishes that, you know, experience of the art, that person is different from what he or she was when he or she entered it. I mean, there is that transformation that takes place. And that's one part of the dual nature of art. The other part is the transformation that takes place in the writer, the painter, the sculptor, as he or she is making this thing. And it is a wonderful process. It is an exhilarating process. And so I think each time I'm doing this thing, I do discover, I decide that this is what I want to do, you know, again and again.
Nice.
And again, really. But it wasn't until I was a young adult in Klamath Falls, Oregon, living in a farmhouse about 8 miles south of Klamath Falls, not in a remote area, but out in farmland, reading essentially periodicals such as The Atlantic, Harper's, Saturday Review. I don't know if you remember Saturday Review, but I certainly did. Yeah. Saturday Review always had, I would say, two poems in each issue. And I started reading these contemporary poems in those wonderful periodicals. And I was stunned. They were so different from the poems that I had read and studied in anthologies for school.
Right.
And I had the feeling, and of course, now looking back on it, I realized that some of those poems that were in Saturday Review or Atlantic or Harper's or whatever might have been poems that those poets wrote 2 years before, or 3 years before, or 10 years before, I don't know. But to me, I just thought they were so fresh, the ink was barely dry on them. You know, I mean, they were right. They were something. This person was writing these things right now, at this moment, you know, when they were being published in these magazines, and they were so wonderful. And I decided, I want to do this thing. I want to do this. I want to write, not their poems, but I want to write poetry. It was just, huh. And I had written a few poems in grade school as responses to, you know, assignments. And had written a few poems in high school, and I think that was more on my own than anything. But I had never thought seriously about devoting any part of my life to writing poetry until, as I say, I was so moved by reading those poems. So people say, what brought you to poetry? Well, poems brought me to poetry. And there I was. And I just started writing.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Did you just sit down then and just start writing a poem? Did you enroll in a class? Did you fill out a form? And
No, I did. I really started on my own. I just started writing.
The first poem you started there, 8 miles south of Klamath, what was the subject?
You know, I don't know exactly what the first one was, although I have longhand copies of a lot of stuff I did then. The first poem I had published was one of the early ones that I wrote, and it was published in the Oregonian.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, Howard McKinley Corning was the poetry editor of the Oregonian. And poems in the Oregonian appeared, I think, in the news pages then. And somewhere I have I cashed the check, but somewhere I have the check stub that I saved from that. I think I got $5
right,
for that poem.
Right.
It was in the 70s.
They don't pay much different now either.
Well, proportionately, it is about the same.
Yeah.
It is about the same.
Yeah.
But that poem was about late light out there in those fields around the old farmhouse where I lived, how in the late, late afternoon light would cut across the fields and show everything in a way that you didn't see it at another time of the day.
Yeah.
So I was writing about the world around me out there. In Klamath Falls, you are directly under the Pacific Flyway. Oh, the birds,
right.
The birds. And of course, there's the Tule Lake Bird Refuge to the south. There are wonderful bird refuges to the north and east. So I wrote about my personal life, about the natural world around me. I just started writing poems.
It's wonderful. Out of that, did you develop a regimen, a specific habit, or any superstitions about
regimen? That was a word that was in one of those questions that you kind of cued me up with early on. I am envious of people who have real writing regimens, who have practices. Not envious enough, obviously, to establish one for myself. I think when I first started writing, I was at that time a housewife with young children out as I say, in this sort of semi-rural spot, raising with my husband at that time, and the, you know, kids, chickens, rabbits, huge vegetable garden, the whole 5 acres in Independence plan. And then shortly thereafter became a teacher myself. And a very busy, demanding life. And I, as I look back on it, I think over those years I developed a habit of writing in snatches, catching bits of time and grabbing those to write. And that has remained my habit over the years. Now, if I, and I love, well, when I do write, what I like better than anything is having a stretch of time out in front of me. And I like to go into the writing and then write for hours and come up for air way down the line. That, too, I guess, is a, what? It's not a, it's, that's not a poor habit, but that's...
It's a style.
Yeah, but that's a kind of, that predilection makes it even tougher for me, because then I'm apt to be looking for a stretch of time when maybe, you know, I would be better off to grab little bits of time in writing.
That poem that you had published in the Oregonian, I have to ask you, were you just swelled with pride?
I was happy to see it there, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that was very, very exciting.
Prestigious.
And, well, some of the people I knew in Klamath Falls took, I think it was in a Sunday paper, took the Sunday Oregonian and actually saw it there and called me or, you know, let me know that, yeah, it was, publication is, it gets your attention.
It does. When you write, how often do you write now? In your role as poet laureate, I imagine you have a lot of administrative things you need to do, like meet with people like us.
This is not administrative. Well, it is a wonderful... People talk about the job as poet, of poet laureate. It's not a job, it's an honor, it's a privilege. But it is remarkably busy, and busier than even I had anticipated. And I figured it would be busy, but I had no idea it would be this busy. So, and since I'm not a person who gets up at 4 or 5 early, in, you know, gets up early to write every day, I am not writing as frequently as I usually am in my life. But I have been asked to write poems, occasional poems, for, well, there's a piece, Mosaic, that will be dedicated in Salem on August 13th. And it's a 40-foot long mosaic wall. It's on the outside wall of the YMCA that's adjacent to the state capitol in Salem. Beautiful thing, and it involves artwork. This mosaic involves artwork from school children, from people in correctional facilities, from all kinds of groups throughout Salem, and they are using some text. And the woman who is directing this effort asked if I would possibly write a poem, and I did, and wonderfully, she likes it well enough that she's going to put the whole poem in the mosaic. And I see that is a wonderful, I mean, what a privilege to be able to write
that's
something for
Dunks
that.
Being in the Sunday Oregonian.
Oh, well, it's actually, and that poem was in yesterday's Oregonian, with a very nice note about the peace mosaic, the, you know, that collaborative effort that is going to be dedicated in Salem.
They're out there. There are all of these aspiring young and old writers and poets and people.
Yes.
And they're just, I think, everyone I meet says, oh, I have the greatest idea for a novel, a book, a story,
course,
a poem, a script.
Yeah.
Every one of us has this in us. Some of us actually act on it and actually do it.
Yeah.
What advice do you have to aspiring writers?
No one can tell your story the way you can. No one else. No one else.
Yeah.
I tell that to people again and again. No one else can write your poems. No one else can write or tell your story. I encourage people whenever I can to give it a try, give it a whirl. I mean, it's a wonderful endeavor. And in fact, it takes so little. You don't have to have a word processing outfit. You know, you can do it with a pad of paper and a pencil or a pen. Writing is, well, it's just, it is exhilarating. We write to create ourselves. We write to, we do, George.
Do it again. Say that again.
We write to create ourselves. We write to discover, to explore moment to moment to moment who we are. You know what the process is like. The kind of writing I love the most, the kind of writing that I hunger for, is the writing where when I begin that process, I do not know where I'm going to end up. I do not know. And that writing is going to take me someplace, and you know how you write something, you know, just getting it down, and then set it aside for half an hour, for a day, for a week, for a month, whatever, and then come back to it and read it again, and you know the thing I'm talking about. You read it again, and you say to yourself, where did that come from? And you know, I mean, that's rhetorical. You know it came from you. But there is that feeling, that sense that, you know, I went someplace here that I would never have predicted that I would have gone. And that is, it is exhilarating. We are creating ourselves as we...
It's magical.
As we do this. It is magical.
Yeah.
It is. And so, why not? I mean, say to everyone who is interested, do it. Give it a try. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I have this wonderful idea, or I have this, people tell you something about their life, and somebody will say, you ought to write that. You ought to write that out, you know. Or people talking about certain aspects of their life, and they say, you know, maybe I should write a memoir. Well, you should.
Yeah.
This is, we are creatures of language and human beings, and I mean, this is our medium.
It is, and it's been, you know, that those 80,000 years ago, those early Homo sapiens sitting in their caves in Europe or Middle East or in Asia, mm-hmm. that they were telling stories.
They were. And, as long as we're going to talk about that, they were the stories that they cared the most about, the stories that were the most significant to them and their culture, those they couched in poetry.
That's right.
Had to. The oral tradition. The things that were important to be passed down from generation to generation were told in poem form with, you know, a poem is a creature of sound, of heartbeat and breath, with the musical devices, with the rhythms so that you can remember them easier. One of the one of the things I love about India is there is a culture in which the most ancient texts of mathematics, of history, of science were written in poetry. Poetry!
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, what can be wrong with a culture that starts out like that? Well, when I learned that from, I did quite a bit of reading and then I learned a lot from my Indian relatives just asking them questions. But when that sunk in, the idea that the ancient texts of India, as they say, in science, mathematics, history, were all written in poetry. I just thought, oh my. Now that's a way to remember things. This is a poetry post. And a lot of poetry posts are rigged up so that the owner, the person, puts a poem inside this surface, and then people walking along can read the poem. And when I got my poetry post, I decided that it would be wonderful if people could have a copy of the poem. So this is almost empty. There's only one left now. I decided that I would figure out a way to make copies available. So I just sort of tacked an envelope back there, and so it says, "Poetry Post, please reach behind this sign and take a copy of this poem." And so if people read the poem, they like it, they just reach back here.
How often do you change the poems?
Well, a lot more often than I thought at first.
Yeah.
Because I got this right. It was right after I knew that I was going to be appointed as poet laureate.
Uh-huh.
And I had thought about one. And there was an article in the Oregonian about this guy, Doug Trotter, who builds them.
Right.
And I had thought to myself, well, I would really love to have one of those. But when I was appointed, I knew I was going to be appointed poet laureate. I thought, okay, this is it. I've got to have one of these now. So I got it installed. And then I put the first poem in there. And it was in April. Rainy, you know, it's Portland. And I thought to myself, okay, Pollyanne, now you're going to have to be really careful, kind of go out and check this every once in a while, because it is Portland. They'll get, you know how paper stuff gets after a while.
Sure.
It gets a little ripply and kind of,
Quinkly.
You know, it absorbs water and the moisture, and, you know, it won't look too great. And so I think it was like 3 days afterwards, somebody said, well, this is a great idea, but there are no poems to take. And I said, well, you don't just lift the lid and reach behind, and there are the poems. And this guy said, there isn't anything there. And I said, well, now wait. And I ran and I looked, and they were gone.
Wonderful.
And so I do have to check every once in a while. They go way faster than I ever thought they would.
That's wonderful.
One time, Ken and I were sitting there. It was a summer evening. We were kind of sitting there on the steps, just enjoying the cool of the evening. And three people, adults, came cycling down 11th Avenue. And, you know, they were moving pretty fast.
Uh-huh.
And they came zipping by here. I was going to say, Ken and I are on the porch. And just as they're going up here, one of the women kind of looked back and she said, I love that poetry post. And they were just off.
Spreading poetry among the masses.
Well, I've seen teenagers stop, take a poem. There are a number of adults now who stop and tell me that they look and, you know, just wait until there's a new poem out so that they can take a copy. It's terrific. It's
neat.
Great. Poetry posts. And there are lots of them in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Northeast.
Yeah, they started really proliferating.
Yes.
Poetry proliferating.
poetry.
Alliteratively proliferating.
So, Pauline, good deal.
You have just been wonderful and an amazing inspiration. Thank you.
Yes.
Seriously, it's just so neat.
Well, it's...
Thank you.
It's fun. You guys are fun to talk to.
Thank you for listening. This has been a presentation of The Author's Road, copyright 2011. This recording was made in July 2011, Portland, Oregon.